America's favorite Christmas toys over the years. Is yours on the list? This is the Focus Group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas. It's Tim Bennett here. It's Christmas Day. If any of you are so pathetic, you're listening to the Focus Group on Christmas Day, John.
They may be watching it. This could be a version of someone's the Yuletide log.
The Yule log, right? And there's a lot of people that don't celebrate Christmas, so they could be, you know, this is just any other day. But I don't think we've ever actually done a Christmas show that broadcast on Christmas.
On Christmas Day, yeah.
Yeah, so we obviously we pre-recorded this show, but we wanted to give you new content for the Christmas holiday season. Other years, we would run some best ofs. Mm-hmm. But this year, John put together, and we put together some articles that we wanted to share with you. And so it's not going to be our typical format of business birthday and visiting with deep discount, but we're going to do
Tim, actually, you had a perfect banter. Business birthday lined up.
Did I? Was it Jesus?
Jesus, because he founded a religion, and that's a pretty big religion. Let me just tell our listeners, Tim and I were getting a private tour of the Vatican Museum and the Sistine Chapel in Italy years ago. And a private tour simply means someone with a flag, because you're surrounded by other people.
Oh my God, thousands.
Thousands. So Tim is strolling down this long marble hallway, and there's tapestry after tapestry and sculptures. All this art is just crammed into this hallway. And Tim stops, and he says to the tour guide, he goes, hey, he goes, why doesn't the Vatican sell some of this off and help with world hunger? The look was like, no, that's you can't do that. And he goes, I bet you got a ton of stuff in the basement, you know, basement of the Vatican, right?
They don't even know what they have. It was so jam-packed. It was more stacked than a Goodwill. I mean, that thing was packed. And nothing seemed to be in order. It's like, we got another gold trinket. Put the goblet over there behind the silver chalice.
Behind the Michelangelo bust or whatever. And then we were in the Sistine Chapel. We thought we were going to have a private viewing of the Sistine Chapel. And it was about two or three years after. It was so crowded that they had guards who kept shushing people. It was after they did the restoration of the ceiling. It was like you were in a dystopian movie of being like, people, you're packed into this room. It was fun, but I still remember that guide's look when you're like, why don't you sell some of this stuff and alleviate world hunger?
Well, listen. We went on a VIP tour. If you had to wait in that line, you know, they could have brought you in any room and had you look up. You didn't have to know that. You wouldn't know where you were. I mean, right?
Because
they didn't want pictures taken.
The chapel looks like,
but maybe not. It could have been a replica just because they didn't want you in there. But the lines were just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, you know, my friend, I was talking to another friend about this, and then Richard, you know, his mom sadly passed away about a month ago, and I was at the funeral, and they were talking about how it was a holiday time and how his mother, every Christmas, they laughed about it, would get a birthday cake. And at the Christmas dinner, they would have to light the candles for Jesus and sing happy birthday to Jesus. Now, they all thought it was quite normal because they'd been doing it since kids, but have you ever heard of that?
No.
Isn't it hilarious?
And another thing
I think
about,
it is.
Another thing about Christmas, which I'm sure a lot of people know, is that Christmas Day is a pagan holiday, and the church moved Jesus, the birthday, or what they thought was the birthday, to the pagan holiday to get the pagans to come on board to the faith. So it's all kind of a ricky-ticky, wheels are coming off the wagon thing. But hey, you know.
I kind of like the idea of having a birthday cake for Jesus, though. When you think about
really
it,
it's really quite
right?
funny, you know?
I don't know. Maybe
I just saw a picture on Instagram of a, it was a manger scene. Like one of these downtown manger things. And you know how they leave the cradle with baby Jesus until Christmas Day? And so in the middle of the manger, there's this cat, like a cat just like curled up where the manger is supposed to be. And I just thought that says everything I want to know about Christmas, right?
Joan Rivers said she had decided she was going to celebrate Christmas, and she was a Jew. She was upset. So she gave Mary a nanny. She said she did her own. And redress Mary out of the blue schmata. She said she put her in a nice outfit and gave her a nanny.
And an au pair.
They're running the old Joan Rivers clips. There were a couple of funny stories that had popped in the feed, as happens this time of year. And I never heard of this place. And this would have been on our list if we had driven, John, cross-country pie here.
Oh,
I'm sure it was right off the exit. But it's called Santa Claus, Indiana. Did you ever know such a place existed?
No, no.
And so they initially, they wanted to call the town Santa Fe and realized that there was a Santa Fe already. So,
golly.
So this was in the mid to late 1800s. So they named the town Santa Claus. And this was in the 1840s. And so Santa Claus, they tried to figure out what they could do to get more people to come to Santa Claus. So they actually developed what was America's very first theme park. So there were amusement parks from as early as the 1840s, they said. But to do actual theme parks where you would have a theme related to something was not a concept. So it was a new concept with Santa Claus, and they opened up Christmas theme park. Is that what it was called? Christmas theme park? I'm trying to pull my thing up here. And so, of course, it was all around the holiday, and there was
Santa Claus Santa land.
Santa so Claus really, land.
Probably more about Santa than the yeah.
Right. And so I just laughed about it and thought, gosh, I wonder why or how we missed that.
How could we possibly miss it? Because here's some of the things. A mini circus, a deer farm, a wax museum, and live entertainment.
And 100 pounds of Thanksgiving turkey are baked each holiday weekend, which I thought, again, was huge. Roller coasters, Santa Clauses, so forth. The other thing that happens at Santa Claus is apparently people wanted the postmark. So the Congress was actually going to make them change the name of the town because they were getting such a huge influx of mail. And so they would say on the average they would get a couple thousand pieces of mail, but during the holiday time they were getting 400,000 pieces of mail just in December, which compared to about 13,000 for the rest of the year.
Bags and bags of children's letters, right?
You know, that happened in Bethlehem, Connecticut. You know, one of the towns near where John and I grew up in Connecticut, Middlebury, Southbury, Woodbury, next to them was Bethlehem, Connecticut. And they had the same issue with people bringing mail there get the Bethlehem stamp. Did you ever mail anything from Bethlehem?
No, but we used to go. There was a nativity, a really nice nativity that was in Bethlehem. I think it was a convent or something that we would go to, and we'd check that out. It was like one of those beautiful, like Holy Land things, you know, with the little statues. But it was run by nuns. I'm pretty sure it was Bethlehem. Yeah.
Yeah, my grandmother she was in Stanford, and she decided when we had first moved up to that area of Connecticut that she was going to mail her Christmas cards from Bethlehem. Which she did it. Well, she did it once. So that was. Anybody looks at the postmark, do they?
No, I don't. I look at the return address and I'm like, oh, so and so sent a card.
Yeah. So you don't see where they don't see that it was stamped Santa Claus or stamped.
Yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, no, I thought we would have hit Santa Claus land. I think you and I would have.
For sure. And we would have had great pictures from that event, right?
Well, you can only imagine how run down it is. It's probably like Dutch Wonderland, right?
Or like Holy Land in Waterbury.
Or Holy.
Yeah, my mother flipping the paper. Oh, and she says to my dad, oh, Steve, someone was raped in the catacombs at Holy Land. I mean, just the sentence alone tells you what you need to know, right?
I saw a book that would be perfect for you that someone did, and it essentially was that. It was that the worst tourist attractions in America, and they actually included, and they based it upon the Yelp reviews.
Yeah.
And they were some of them were so nasty. And I was reading through some of them and screaming. I'm like, oh my God, this book has John all over it.
It has the focus group all over it. We should actually do a trip one day through all the worst of them, right?
Well, and one of them that was the worst you and I went to, we actually kind of liked, which was the, of course, I don't know why I'm losing my mind today, but the place in Idaho with the
Craters of the Moon National Park.
Craters of the Moon National Park was one of them.
We loved it. It was fantastic. It's a big lava field.
Well, everybody expected to see hot lava.
According to
the Yelp, and there's no hot lava. It's just a bunch of rocks. It's like Afghanistan.
It's dormant. It's an old lava field. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of them on there. But I laughed because I figured these would be on there. This would be on there. Holy Land would be on there. Probably Merrimack Taverns.
Yeah, oh, Merrimack Caverns again. Yes.
Yeah. So, or caverns. So, yeah. So that was Santa Claus, Indiana. If anybody's from there, give us a call. Get some socks. Then I also saw this passed up here, and I thought poor Prince Andrew's in trouble again Christmas
yes,
time.
Yes, he is.
And so the royals are having their Christmas, but I guess when the Queen was alive, she was very strict about who could attend and whether you were in or you were out. And so since Charles has taken over and Camilla, they've actually been able to blend the families now with so many divorces between them. And they're actually going to have some of Camilla's family attend, which in years, decades past with Charles, they were not allowed to attend. But poor Prince Andrew, I didn't hear about this, but apparently he was involved with some Chinese spy. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I just, you know.
He can't wait. I mean, he's the Hunter Biden of the UK.
Tim has always said about the royal family, if you're not number one in line, you have it made. Right.
Best gig
in the
world.
Is keep your head down. Just keep your head down. Show up to events. Do your thing, and you're set.
Princess Anne, you know, she figured it out. You know, you get all the benefit without the responsibility. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, Prince Andrew and Prince Harry didn't seem to get the note.
Well, Andrew is probably the most outrageous, right? Because of Epstein, the whole. I mean, like, yeah.
Well, for the first time in years, Fergie, the Duchess of York, was invited because Charles liked her. And she says she adores the king and she adores Charles, and he still calls her Fergie.
Okay.
But she'd been banished for years, although her daughters could go at Christmas. But the queen didn't like having her there because Prince Philip didn't like her.
Oh.
So she was delighted to be invited and included back again. But now, once again, she was told probably should stay away because of what Andrew's had some
Chinese
sort of
spy.
Chinese spy connection. So she's going to sit this out again as the girls go up there. And
I don't think Harry's going to anything, right?
No, he's not. He's not going, and Meghan, of course, is not going. But they listed a bunch of other royals. And as you know, they do cheap, jokey gifts.
Yeah,
which you and I had talked before. One of my favorite ones: Harry gave the Queen a bathing cap.
Yeah,
that said "Ain't life a bitch," and they said she loved it. They also said Meghan Markle had given the Queen a dancing hamster, and they said the Queen loved it. It was a wind-up hamster, and it would dance. And she said it kept the dogs company. They said Lady Di had given Fergie a leopard bath mat, leopard skin, like kind of cheap looking bath mat. And they just went through some fun gifts that were given to him.
Kate gave Camilla edible underwear.
Edible underwear. Right. Kate gave Prince Harry a girlfriend in a kit or, you know, grow a girlfriend.
It's kind of a sly little gift there, right?
So I like that idea, though, of giving cheeky, cheap,
funny gifts.
Gifts, yeah. Probably nothing under what? Nothing over $10, I'm guessing.
I'm surprised there's not a royal whoopee cushion. That would have been.
Well, Princess Anne gave Charles a leather toilet seat cover as a joke, and he liked it so much they said he travels with it.
Oh, leather?
It's a. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. So anyway, that was. So I didn't get my invite to the royal.
No, neither did I.
You know, I look at these. I want to know what goes on inside these houses or these castles.
They're so huge, right?
What do you think? Is it just an apartment in there or what is it?
Yeah.
Is it cold? Yeah. Is it drafty?
I think it's a little chilly. I think unless they're like, you know, doing some kind of crazy heating. Just watch The Crown. Like, I know they're not filming at the actual locations, but some of the houses they film at, you're like, wow, it's a lot of space. Like, you know, you really just need a bedroom, a kitchen. You know what I mean?
Have you and Bob done, because when you were in the UK, have you done any of the tours of the...
Just Buckingham Palace.
The residence. You went inside? So yeah, what are they just... Yeah. Is it just the formal rooms you got to go to?
Yeah, yeah. And then we went to Windsor Castle as well. And Windsor is the formal public rooms as well. And Windsor was cool because we saw the restoration after the horrible fire destroyed a lot of it. And the Queen was in residence when we were there. Her flag was flying. And I said to one of the tour, the docents or one of the people that hang out, I said, the flag. Oh, yes, the Queen's in residence. She's here for a concert this evening. So
she didn't come down to see you.
Well, it was actually a couple of years ago. I took Bob to London for his birthday, and it was 2 weeks before Christmas. So it was a lot of fun being in London for that.
Well, yeah, I haven't been to London in a while, but...
always a fun visit, because guess what? They speak our language.
Speak our language, right. So John and I, we've talked on our podcast. John, we were talking about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and then we went through a number of our favorite, or what were some of our favorite holiday shows, either now or as kids. And John, you said, which I was surprised about, that you loved Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
More than Rudolph. I don't know why. I know the word, every word to every song in Santa Claus is Coming to Town. If it comes on, I'm transfixed and mesmerized. Bob just looks at me like I'm crazy.
So are the songs as fun as the Rudolph songs?
Yeah, I think so. But that's, you know, they've made so many of these that, like, Rudolph is great, but there's something about Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I don't know.
Is that the one where the young kid becomes Kris Kringle?
Kris Kringle, and he's adopted by the elves, and there's the Winter Warlock whose heart's melted when he's given a train, and he has magic beads for the... Yeah, it's just zany. It's hysterical. I love it.
Well, I'll have to, but
you and I have a favorite, though, out of all of these stuff.
Right. The one we agree on is the Pee-wee Herman Christmas special, and John was able to pull up a number of fun facts about the show, and I don't know why this is not, maybe it is on Nickelodeon or something, but I wonder why some of the networks or a network hasn't picked this up to play it during the Christmas season. Oh. I just still think it holds up.
If you haven't seen it, you could pop over to our friends at Deep Discount and pick up the Pee-wee Christmas special and probably the whole season or the seasons he was on. Quick Pee-wee story. When Bob's niece Catherine was young, he sent her a set of the DVD. He sent the whole series for Pee-wee.
Oh, this TV show?
Yeah, for the whole TV. And my sister-in-law Susan would like call us and let us know that when she heard the theme song, bum ba dum ba dum, you know, she would start jumping around, laughing and dancing, and she loved the Pee-wee show. So there was one time where Pee-wee asked kids to send him drawings, and she actually gave her mom a drawing to send to the Pee-wee Herman show, and Susan sent it to Bob. Bob found an 8x10 photograph of Pee-wee and imitated his signature with a Sharpie.
Oh my God.
And sent it back to Catherine. It's like, you know, and she had it on her wall for years. It was her like badge of honor. Like Pee-wee loved her drawing. So Pee-wee appealed to adults. We watched it every morning. We were transfixed on Saturday.
Did you tell your poor niece that Pee-wee never really responded?
Yeah, she was. Eventually, she learned, and she still loved it, but because he had been off the air for a while, obviously. But then the Christmas special came out, and I just remember being slack-jawed watching the whole thing. It was just brilliant. And so we found, I went online and I found some interesting facts about the Pee-wee Herman Christmas special. If you do watch it, I think it's a holiday must. First thing is the show. Wait,
Before you do the facts, I just wanted to run through, just so anybody doesn't think how gay the show was, the guest stars.
Yes.
So I'll just read through them quick. Annette Funicello, Frankie Avalon, Grace Jones, Katie Lang, Dinah Shore, Little Richard, Cher, Magic Johnson, Zsa Zsa Gabor, the Del Rubio triplets, Whoopi Goldberg, Oprah Winfrey, Joan Rivers, and Charo.
You know, you could have stopped at Little Richard, but then you add the icing on the cake after that. So the show opens with what you think is the a Marine choir, because it's all these guys in Marine uniforms with the white hats, but it's actually the men's choir of UCLA who opens the show. And I think they did a couple of takes. There's even one take where Pee-wee bumped into one of them and the hat fell away and Pee-wee gives him a quick look. And that's actually the take they used in the show. But it's just such a great way to open the show. The Marine Choir, which is actually UCLA. What's our next one?
So the lighting apparatus, so Miss Yvonne, who I love, she was kind of the ruler of the house in some regards. So Miss Yvonne's hair actually shorted out and started smoking during production. So if you're watching on our video, she had some sort of like a Christmas tree wig on, or a Christmas tree attached to her to her wig with lights. And they said that during the production, the crew had to intervene and remove the power pack because her wig was starting to steam. And I don't know, did it catch on fire?
I think it just started shorting.
Smoking.
And smoking. And I think they're like, okay, get that hair off. The next little fun fact was Katie Lang was asked by Paul Rubens to be on the show after hearing her first record, which he loved. And there was an issue with Warner Brothers, but eventually she did the thing. And her segment was the longest one to film. It took nearly half a day. And she does a song called Jingle Bell Rock or something, right?
Right. Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell
Rock. And she dances in front of Cool Cat, you know, the cat band, the jazz band. And she actually did a great performance. But, I mean, she was half a day to get that. I don't know how many times they must have done that. But
wow. But Magic Johnson, who was playing with the Lakers at that time, he was different, probably did the shortest or one of the shortest segments because he was playing and they were filming. They were able to get him in and out in under an hour.
Hour, yeah.
So I always thought he was an odd mix to the group.
Yes, but he did it. He jumped into the magic screen, rode the sleigh, was attacked by the bear. I mean, I agree with you. It was just a funny thing that they had him in there. My God.
Yep.
Let's see. The next one here is that Cher as Tim mentioned before, Cher was one of the long lineup of guests, and she came in when Conky, the robot, gave the secret word of that show, and it was the word year, which I think was screamed or said about six times during the broadcast. And she, yay, she does the scream too. I mean, they all definitely were playing like they were part of the Playhouse. I mean, that's what the greatest thing about this was.
Well, and everybody stopped by, and wasn't he giving them all a fruitcake, or everybody was
they gave him a fruitcake, and he started to treat them like bricks, like they were so thick and heavy that he was going to build something with it.
Have you ever had a good fruitcake?
I'm not a fan of fruitcake.
I'm not either. My grandmother insisted on having it.
Yeah,
the candied fruit or whatever.
Yeah.
My grandmother insisted on having it. I guess it was one of those things where you had to have it because it was Christmas, mm-hmm. but you cut it up and put it out, and everybody looked at it. It was about it.
And then it grew mold. Yeah.
Who else was on? Grace Jones did. Was it Little
Shall
Drummer
I
Boy?
Shall I Play for Him? A Rumpa Pump? The Little Drummer Boy. Yeah, she did
Little
the,
Drummer yeah. Boy. But, and then they said that the show. That the show actually aired the same day of the, which is kind of not a good or a sad thing, was the Lockerbie Pan Am flight bombing.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah.
In 1988. But I remember watching it the first time and just, now I can tell you, I could have done without Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon. I thought that was the weakest part of the show.
Yeah, but they were making those cards with the potatoes they carved or something. Yeah, I agree with you. It was, they were not my favorites. But again, they weren't really... They were not that long. And if you're watching on YouTube, the picture that I put up at the end of this Pee-wee thing here is Pee-wee with Little Richard. Little Richard could make Liberace look like a straight man. I mean, he's got this glitter jacket on, big smile. I mean, he's an ultimate performer, but...
Didn't he also hide his sexuality as well?
Forever? I believe he did, yeah.
Yeah.
And then later on, didn't he renounce it and say that he had found Jesus and Jesus said, something like that. Yeah, so that, folks, that's the Pee-wee little roundup. If you're a fan of the Pee-wee Herman Christmas special or the show, then you'll appreciate some of that trivia. If you are new to it, by all means, get yourselves a copy or somehow find it online because it is a fun special. We're going to take a really quick break here. When we come back, we have the popular toys of almost every year from 1950 something forward. We're not going to go through all of them. But they made us laugh, and we'll think you'll make you laugh, too, because you'll recognize them. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now back to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah, which has fallen on the same day.
They fall on the same time, yeah.
Yeah, which doesn't happen. So it's a holiday spectacular here on the Focus Group. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to check out all of our media at focusgroupradio.com. You'll also find our podcast there, which is TFG Unbuttoned, which we did a Christmas Eve show as well. So Mr. Nash... we had found a list from Cosmopolitan, I believe it was, and it listed the most popular toys of each year. And so we, John and I had both looked at the list and pulled out what we thought were some of our favorites or some standouts. And then we both shared our own popular or what our favorite toys were.
Toys that we might have
got at Christmas. But what do you think about this list overall, Mr. Nash?
Oh, I love the list. And we Tim and I went as far as, I guess, our college years, because some things like Teddy Ruxpin or the Furbies, we weren't buying that stuff.
Tickle Me Elmo.
We knew that they were crazy things, Cabbage Patch Kids that everybody had to be at the store at. But let's look at some of the toys we've picked some of our, like the year we were born. Tim, I think the toy of the year was Easy Bake Oven, right?
Yes, it was the...
Let's make a cake with a light bulb. Okay.
Did your sister have one?
Oh, sure.
She did. Did she make the brownie? Wasn't there a little brownie you could make?
It was like practically paper thin. It was paper thin because a light bulb was baking the thing. I mean, it's a 60 watt bulb. You couldn't even get hurt on it. But Tim and I chose as one of our first favorite toys from the past, the Magic 8 Ball, which was debuted or became, was the toy of the year in a 1951. It says here, the toy is a fortune teller's dream come true. I loved it. I thought it was developed by Mattel. It's still one of the more accurate ways to find out if your crush actually likes you.
I have mine on my desk. I still talk to it.
Flip it over. Like, there you go.
Let's see. What do you want to know, John? I'll ask it a question. Do you want to know anything?
Well, I used to do it all the time. It'd be like, come back later. I'm like, well, what are the spirits not telling
me? Is John going to hit the jackpot with his Star Wars cards next year? That's the question.
Or the homeless guy with the arms written on his, the lottery number is written on his arm that he said came from God.
John, it definitively came up yes.
Oh.
Better get these cards photographed.
When Bob hears this, that's accelerating. All right, what's our next one?
The next one was Plato, which I joked when we were going through this list. My nephews, great nephews, love Plato as all kids did. There's been over 100 million cans that have sold are sold every year. 100 million cans every year still. Wow. And all it is flour, water, salt, boric acid. Maybe that sounds dangerous. And mineral oil. The one thing I could never get over was it always had a distinct smell. Was there? And I always tried to find out, did they put some sort of scent in it on purpose, or where did the smell come from?
No, I remember. It was just the minute you opened the can, you could smell the Play-Doh. Maybe it was that boric acid ingredient. I loved Play-Doh. We had a bunch of, you know, the stuff you would press and it would come through as a star, like, or whatever.
My friend Matt tells a story. You know Matt. He is an artist, and the house that they were growing up in, they got Play-Doh for Christmas, and he said the floor had a lot of cracks in it, and air would come through from the basement.
Put the Play-Doh down.
He did, and his mother. It was all different colors, right? Because he took a butter knife and decided to fill in all the cracks, and Mama was not happy. With the
helpful child, though. I mean, let's get the drafts down, right?
Yep.
All right,
that was 1957.
1957 was played. The next one I wanted included because I loved this as a kid, and it was the ViewMaster, which debuted or was the toy of the year in 1958. I had that very same for years. It was a brown ViewMaster. You put that wheel in, you'd click, and it was that stereo thing where it kind of gave it depth. We had a ViewMaster projector. We had the ViewMaster reels. I mean, I love that stuff. I only recently got rid of it, actually, and I was kind of almost wanting to hold on to it because I had like all the reels. I had Scooby-Doo, all this other stuff. Anyway,
I went to an art gallery with Pam and our friends Pam and Nancy, and there was a whole display or an art installation of ViewMaster stuff, which you would have loved.
Classic toy, 1958.
Classic toy. 1962, I laugh because John told a story about this, but Etch-a-Sketch, which could probably maybe the first iPad, right? Lots of great ideas about what you were going to do with it. And you and I both said we would try to do something, you know, you would look at the pictures, maybe, you know, somebody did this huge landscape or something. But, you know, aside from turning the lines here and there, I'm not so sure I did anything monumental out of my Etch-a-Sketch.
With our Etch-a-Sketch, we tried to do this thing where you do the vertical and the horizontal knobs, and we would try to eliminate line by line everything on the screen so we could see the workings of the Etch-a-Sketch inside. And when that stopped amusing us, we would try elaborate pictures. And we were on a family vacation in the car once, and I'm doing the left and the right knobs, and I'm doing this picture. I'm getting ready to show Mom and Dad my work of art. The car hits a bump. The Etch-a-Sketch pops up off my lap and lands, and it was all erased. It's like, so...
So what, you, that was it for the Etch-a-Sketch. You, that's probably never picked it up again.
Well, it did. It was relegated after that. It didn't do too much after that. Now, I never had this next toy. Friends did. My friend Jeffrey had it, and I loved it. And it's from 1967. Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It would knock the block your block. Was it the kids ad like I'm going to knock your block off.
And when you hit it, it made this noise. We had two of them because we wore out the first one. My brother got it, and then we got it again because my brother and I, it was great for, you know, two young boys to get their frustration
out. Work out their aggressions.
Work out our aggressions. And I was always the red one because I liked red, but we would go back and forth, and it was bang, 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 then and knock your block off.
And then when you put it back down, it made that ratcheting noise.
Yep. Yeah. Simple toy, but, you know, it's that's what they
talk about. Simple. What's our next one?
Simple. 1975. My grandmother got us these because she was always on top of the
trends,
trends in pop culture. A pet rock. You know, who needs a cat or dog when you can get a pet rock? Smooth stones made the perfect 70s pets, complete with googly eyes. I don't know if I had googly eyes on mine.
I don't remember googly eyes at all. They showed a picture of one with them, but I remember this was the pet rock that I got. It was literally just a box with some Excelsior.
Box with a rock. You went to the beach, right? When you think about this, someone would go on to the beach or whatever, right? You picked up some rocks and threw it in a box. Would Tim, people fall for it now?
We were not even aware of what the things we were missing, but we were missing out on the pet rock. The guy made a fortune. They were like, there was a flash in the pan. Like a year or two later, they're gone.
Get in, get out. Yeah, that's all you got to do. I'd be happy with it. But I wonder how many millions he made. Probably still living off it.
So that was pet rock. So in 1977, the year that Star Wars came out, Atari debuted their first video game console called the Atari 2600. Envy of anybody who had this in our neighborhood. They were the envy of the block because they had the Atari. Before this was Pong. You know, remember Pong?
Boop, yeah.
Boop. The
thing I still have up. A Pong. I still have it.
No.
Yeah. It's up in the attic at my mom's house.
Mm.
I thought of taking it down. I guess I could just plug it in the TV still, don't you think?
Maybe. All this old electronic
Look at you,
stuff.
Maybe.
It's from 1977, Tim. You don't know if it's going to play or not, right?
You know what? When I'm in Connecticut, I'm going to try
you
to
should
see
have
if I
a
can
look
find
at that,
it.
Yeah.
Bunk, bunk. All it is, yeah, back and forth. Very, very simple. The John, I was always envious. John had entertained an anniversary party of one of our friends with the Rubik's Cube. And, you know, from the Hungarian sculptor, this... famous Rubik's Cube. John was able to figure it out, and we were at our friend Marianne's parents' 25th wedding anniversary party, if you remember this, in high school.
Oh, I do, yeah.
And John had the Rubik's Cube with him and was showing people how he could do it. Remember?
They would mix it up and then hand it to me. Tim, you and I were actually kind of sideshows. You taught people how to do the YMCA dance.
Yeah.
I did the Rubik's Cube. And then we heard all this stuff from all the adults about people we knew, teachers, gossip.
Town gossip.
We're like, we're kids, but okay. We loved it. I mean, that's what I love Marianne's parents for. They're like, they treated us like we were part of the family. All right, so Rubik's Cube. This next one here, we included because Tim posted on Facebook one of the funniest Christmas morning videos I think I've ever seen. And this thing is called the Sky Dancer. It's like a fairy. And you wind it up or something and you push a button. And she leaps off her stand and twirls into the air. And the video that Tim posted, which is just brilliant, there's a child playing with the Sky Dancer next to an open fireplace, and the Sky Dancer goes up and then swoops into the fire.
The draft pulls her in.
The minute pulls
to play, and you hear the mother, oh, no!
No!
The little girl screaming and crying. The father's just sitting there in the chair. It's on Facebook, and there are several versions of this, but every Christmas, because the little girl's like, and then you hit the button, and she just, little fairy goes up and then zoom into the fireplace. My mother's screaming. And I think I said, you know, on the 26th, Dad was out looking for another Sky Dancer.
Sky Dancer.
as theirs had gone up the chimney in flame. How could you not have laughed at that if you were there, though? I guess the little kid was traumatized. But, you know.
And I think you're right, Tim. They should be happy they have a good fireplace. That flue was pulling air through.
Pulled
right?
it right in.
Pulled the fairy, the Sky Dancer in.
And then just as a pop culture thing, we both had noticed that not only in 1959, but in 2023, Barbie shows up. She was the number one toy, dominated the toy scene in 1959. More than a billion Barbies have sold worldwide.
Billion? Did you say a billion?
A billion, yes. It's estimated that more than a billion Barbie dolls have been sold worldwide. Mattel claims they sell about 100 every minute still.
Wow. Okay.
Another thing we missed.
I think we could be forgiven for that.
I think a lot of companies try to replicate the success of Barbie, but remember there's all kinds of other little dolls that have come out over the years, but I don't think anything has really taken on like Barbie has. Just certainly have gone from the number one toy in 59 to the number one toy in
2023.
But that's obviously because of the movie, right?
Talk about a cultural footprint too, right?
Yeah.
So I have yours first three, Tim, lined up. So if you want, as Tim mentioned, we each were tasked with our three favorite toys or the go-to toys we loved for the most years of our childhood. So you're up, Mr. Bennett.
Right. So for the, so I just thought to myself, what were the three toys that I played with most, or I was most excited about and liked? And so I came up with the three. The first one was I had a Stingray, a blue Schwinn Stingray bicycle. And that was the bike to have, as you know, 1969, 1970.
And if you're watching, it's got the banana seat. Although Tim said, did you have the sissy bar?
Then I later, because all the other kids in the neighborhood got that sissy bar, which was the tall bar in the back that you put on. So I had that attached. And but the thing weighed about, God, 500 pounds. I mean, when you think about it, your parents give you that bike, you were tired. I mean, that one speed, a lot of hills in Connecticut.
Going up hills.
Yeah, it was good going down because it was like a tank, but going uphill, you were walking it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Stingray, the Schwinn Stingray bike. I remember getting that and just thought it was the coolest. Then there was a shooting gallery that I got.
I saw this.
And
I love this thing. It's like a mini arcade game.
I still have it, and it still works.
Really?
Yes. And I was trying to get my nephew to play it. My niece was not so sure about the gun shooting. But you would see at a carnival. You shoot ducks, you shoot a little clown.
So what comes out of the gun, like little pellets or something?
It's little BBs.
And then you fill it up.
But it's all enclosed, and it's on an angle, right? Like a 45-degree angle.
So the BBs somehow load back into the...
Loads right back into the gun. Okay. Shoot, 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 shoot. It's a lot of fun. It's batteries. I loved it by Marx Brothers Toys. And I would still play with it now. Matter of fact, I'm going to get up in that attic. And then the other toy that I loved that my dad and my uncle and my older cousins ended up taking over, and this was another toy that I ended up getting a couple versions of because we wore it out, was the Verdi Bird.
Oh.
And it was this helicopter that could go up and pick up different things and spin. We used to irritate the poor cat with it until the cat's hair got all caught in the propeller. And then you could get it going pretty fast, and then you'd hit somebody with it, and then that would be it for the toy. But I love the Verdi Bird. That was by Mattel, I think.
It's funny that we don't overlap. Like, I know these toys that you love. I never had a Verdi Bird. So my three are the ones I play with the most. First up is Lego. And we're going back to the 60s and 70s. So Lego was basic Lego. It was just, you had the platform, you had the, it wasn't these elaborate kits and stuff. So you could make whatever you wanted. But I think I played with Legos for a number of years. And I just adore them because it lets your imagination run wild. My second one was my Major Matt Mason.
Oh, you love that Major Matt.
So on the right there, Tim, is the package he came in. He comes with an orange moon scooter. He had a helmet. And he was Mattel's first man in space. And I had Callisto, his friend, this alien from Jupiter, a bunch of other stuff. I loved imagining, because this is the dawn of the space age. You know, by our age, we were supposed to be in orbit having cocktails, which didn't happen. And my last favorite of all time, and I played with this for years and developed a whole thing about it, was model rocketry. And the first rocket I ever got was called the Alpha 3. It was a basic rocket. It came with a parachute, an engine, a launch pad. And I loved the Estes catalogs, too. I would go through the catalog and just dream of, like, there's, I'm showing one here of a picture of a rocket that had a camera in the nose cone. My friend Ricky eventually got this rocket with the camera. The pictures were so blurry.
Now it's a drone.
Well, this thing would launch, and it would do something called the ejection charge, which would get the nose cone off, and the parachute would often not come out, but it did. And as it descended, this thing took pictures. We went to the lab. 2 weeks later, we got the pictures back. We're like, I can't wait to see what our house looks like from in the air. And it was just a blurry mess. But more often than not, we would go launching rockets. You usually have an adult with you because those engines, you had to put an igniter in. One time I launched one of my Alpha 3s, it goes way up, and then we see a puff, and then it just, the wind picked up and the parachute came out and just drifted away. And my dad goes, there goes your rocket. I'm like, well, why am I going to go get it? He goes, no, because it went into like this area that was really wooded.
It's like the Challenger.
My parents, had to spend a lot on. Alpha
was 3s. Was this like the there were those airplanes you could do too that had a little motor to them, and you had to put like some sort of gas alcohol?
Yes, Tim. This was a propellant. It was a solid.
Right.
It was a cylinder that went in, and you put two wires, connected it to a thing, and often the ignition wouldn't happen. You'd have to stand back and.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of times there was always a lot more work with dad helping you trying to get the thing going. Because I remember my cousin had one of those car things, and they never, ever
Always.
You know, yeah. It would go, but then it wouldn't go, or it'd crash, or just...
You know, Tim, I'm seeming to remember that those planes, or the Stirling engine, is that what they called it? I'll have to look that up. My rocketry career ended, though, and my friend Ricky and I figured that if most of these things were disposable, we might as well have fun with it. So one day he said, hey, we were getting ready to go shoot rockets with his dad. We soaked, there was a wadding that you put in to protect it from the engine and the parachute, and he soaked the wadding with gasoline.
Uh-oh.
And the rocket shoots up, and it does the ejection charge, and the thing literally blew up in the air. Boom! And Mr. Lenkowski is just looking up at that thing, and he looks at the two of us. He goes, you know, boys, he goes, I think we're done with rocketry for the day. And then we get in the car, and he goes, how did that happen? We're like, oh, we have no idea how. Too bad we couldn't recover the rocket. I would have figured out what made it blow up. I'm like, oof. So rocket.
It's like when you blow up the kiln. Like when you blew up the kiln in pottery.
Actually,
made all the kids cry. I thought you did it. Put the bubble in there. Whatever you do, don't put a bubble in there.
And Brian was making an ashtray, and he purposely rolled the rim over and created a whole air channel. And we're like, Brian, you can't do that. You can't. We came in a week later, and what was it, Liza, Mrs. Lysak? She used to wear these sandals, and she says, "Kids, I got some bad news for you. We had a kiln accident." And she takes this tray of all this shattered stuff, and everybody's shocked and appalled because we were going to make a cup for Mom or an ashtray for Dad. And Brian's just sitting there with a smile on his face, like, "Oh, that's so horrible."
So Fawn Leibowitz died in Animal House, a kiln accident.
All right. There you go, folks. We want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Hope you have a really good New Year. Please stay safe on the road. We like to say here on the Focus Group, don't text and drive, arrive alive. Focusgroupradio.com, again, is our website. You can learn about us there, as well as our other companion podcast called TFG Unbuttoned. And we look forward to seeing you on our first show in the new year, which will be a few days after the actual new year. So everybody have a good holiday, and we'll see you soon.
It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning Focus Group.